to Tax Breaks, a podcast by the Federation of Tax Administrators, where we delve into current subjects and their relevance to the realm of tax administration. Each episode of our podcast features conversations with esteemed professionals from government, academia, and the private sector. Our guests generously share their wealth of knowledge and unique perspectives, providing invaluable insights and expertise to our listeners. I'm Ryan Minnick, FTA's Chief Operating Officer, and this episode I talk with Nancy Prosser, recently retired, the former General Counsel of the Multi-State Tax Commission, and former counsel to the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts. Nancy and I had an incredible conversation covering her career from the very beginnings at the Texas Comptroller's Office all the way through to her national role at the Multi-State Tax Commission. She shares some incredible insights into her thoughts on how unique the state and local tax world is, what it means to be an attorney in state and local tax, the importance of collaboration, and her reflections, given that we just wrapped up celebrating Women's History Month in March, on what it means to be a female tax attorney in the state and local tax world. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Nancy Prosser. Well, welcome, Nancy Prosser, former general counsel of the MTC, former counsel to the Texas Comptroller's Office. It is so exciting to have you on the podcast. We've talked about this for a few months now, and you had kind of silently sailed into retirement, and it was perfect timing to have you come back now and do an episode, because we just, as of recording, we just finished celebrating Women's History Month in March. So, you know, what a great chance to chat with a remarkable, not only attorney, but also woman attorney who has had an incredible career. So welcome to Tax Breaks. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, it's terrific to see you, Ryan, and it's great to be here. As you said, I've now been away from the salt world for about 6 months, so it was fun to have to reflect a little bit and think again about salt things, because I certainly have not been doing that, I must say, for a few months.
Oh, well, that sounds fantastic. I think, you know, I'm always jealous of the folks that we get to talk to who have entered that next chapter where they're retired, but they're, you know, they're doing the things that bring them absolute joy. And while we all like to say that salt brings us absolute joy when we're working in it, I think we all have different interests outside of salt. So it's nice that you've been able to indulge those. I know you've been doing some traveling and just really enjoying that extra time back. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Again, great to be with you, and thank you for the invitation to speak with you today.
Of course. So I guess now we have to go back and talking about salt, of course, sure. Since we call the podcast Tax Breaks, might as well get around to talking about it. So I think for our listeners, so, you know, folks listening are familiar with FTA, what we do. We've talked to a lot of folks in the tax administration space. You know, the Multi-State Tax Commission, and even really the legal profession, the legal part of salt, is I find personally fascinating as a non-attorney, as a technology person who has no business other than to drive the attorneys crazy. You know, I think it'd be helpful for our listeners to hear about how you ended up in salt, because none of us got here by saying one day that we wanted to be in state and local tax. So right. I don't know if you take a minute just to share what your journey was into the salt law world.
Sure, I'd be glad to do that. So, my undergraduate degree was in psychology. And then I did a master's in business administration. It was during that time I decided that law school was where I wanted to head next. And so when I hit law school, I did not have tax law in mind, but I thought something business oriented. But really my path into the salt world started when I had a clerking opportunity at the Texas Attorney General's office in what was called and is still called the Taxation Division. And those were the attorneys who represented the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts, which is the tax agency in Texas. And after clerking for a while and passing the bar, I was able to move into an attorney role there. So for the first 6 years or so of my career, I was doing litigation and state appellate work, again, representing the tax agency in disputes over the constitutionality, the proper interpretation of tax statutes. And during that time, I just had some really wonderful mentors who were superb attorneys, superb human beings, really great writers and appellate specialists that, you know, helped me understand the salt world. And then the cases I was handling, of course, I had to work with people inside the agency, frequently policy specialists, auditors, to understand from them, you know, why did the agency do this? help me understand what this all means and how you interpret things, and then representing that in court. So that was a wonderful experience. And then from there, I ended up spending some time in the private sector representing clients before the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts. And after about 10 years, then I had an opportunity to actually join the agency, and I just decided that that felt like a good fit, because after that 10 years, I felt like the policy issues were the things that most interested me, and so I was able to join the policy area. And from there, it was just a lot of wonderful opportunities within that agency to grow, and that was where also I got my initial knowledge about the Multi-State Tax Commission, started doing some work on behalf of the Comptroller's Office with that organization, you know, also getting exposure to the Federation of Tax Administrators over the years and all the good work that they do. So, you know, which then eventually, though, culminated in 2020 when I joined the MTC as General Counsel. And then had the wonderful opportunity that I did there to work with that terrific group of attorneys and people and really have a truly, you know, multinational perspective and responsibility to help other attorneys and our, you know, the MTC member state agencies with their work. And so you know, it was over 30 years that I did this work, but I just, you know, had a wonderful experience, and I just, in thinking about coming and talking with you today, just feel a lot of gratitude that I met amazing people along the way, got to do some really interesting work along the way, and it's just been a terrific career, and I'm, again, very grateful for where I am today.
Awesome. Well, I think anyone thinking about a career in law in the state and local tax, I hope they're motivated by that incredible story arc that you just shared. I know briefly in there you were in D.C. working for Texas because you were not too far from our office. I think you were just down the hall,
right,
in our Hall Estates building.
That's exactly right. Yeah, just one floor apart from each other. Exactly.
Excellent. Well, you know, something that you were saying kind of made me curious. The legal profession is incredibly complex. The state and local tax world is incredibly complex. And something that you said about when you're working and representing the Texas Comptroller's Office, you had to work with those tax experts, those folks inside of the agency to understand things. What's it like? I think, you know, a lot of attorneys, this their specialty, law is complicated no matter what field you practice in. I feel like, maybe I'm biased, that the state and local tax world probably adds an incredible layer of complexity to the legal profession. So what was your approach for learning that along the way? Because I know, I've known you, you know, the last almost 10 years, and you've always been so technically knowledgeable about tax in addition to technically knowledgeable about law. So at some point you absorbed that like a sponge, I suspect, from the people that you worked with.
Well, I've always described, you know, the salt world, or I guess the way that I looked at the legal realm of state and local tax, it's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. That's one of those things I enjoy doing, is jigsaw puzzles. And if you do jigsaw puzzles, you know, you separate the puzzle pieces, and you look for common colors, and you look for common patterns. And so to me, throughout my career, you had to deal with whatever the issue you were studying or working on at the time, and you did a deep dive and you tried to learn everything you could about that. It's like on a jigsaw puzzle where you're like, okay, today I'm going to focus on these red pieces, and I've got to figure out how these red pieces fit here, and eventually you get that red piece done, and then you say, okay, now I've got a different subject matter, and it's all these strange shapes and you know, patterns, and so I'm going to focus on that, or I need to focus on that, and you fill in that part of the puzzle. But with state and local taxes, with any area of law, there's always going to be you're never going to finish the puzzle. And so, you know, you have to just be mindful, though, that, you know, you have to, you know, work on the issues that are presented, but at the same time, you know, also over the years, you know, one of the things I always recommended to young attorneys or people getting started in this field was, to the extent you can get access to it, read the tax press, you know, because that's a really good way to start getting a good feel for who the players are, because in this SALT world, whether it's at the state level or there's a fairly small community of people who do it at a national level. So, you know, learn who's talking about these issues and figure out who you think has the right right perspectives on that. Learn who those voices are, whether it's people from the Multi-State Tax Commission or an article that Brian Olliner, you know, general counsel for FTA, has written. You know, look for those voices and be mindful of those issues that are bubbling through the rest of the country. And you know, and that's another good way, or at least that was a way that I approached trying to both, you know, improve my knowledge and awareness of what the issues were, but also, you know, learn. And then of course, the really great thing about being in this arena is just the tremendous generosity that you find amongst the people who do this work. And I know that was, you know, always one of those things that, you know, whether it was with the, you know, through the MTC years, those early years, that was such a valuable thing when I would go to those meetings on behalf of the Texas Comptroller's Office to meet other people in the departments of revenue, you know, to meet the people who were, you know, doing this work, and to know you're not alone. And I was thinking about that, again, in preparation for doing this podcast with you, that, you know, if you're a young attorney or you're a policy person, whoever you may be in a department of revenue, the really great thing to know is you're never alone. And, you know, it's one of those wonderful things FTA does so well. You know, even the Streamline States, there's just a wonderful community of people who will support you, who will do their very best to share their knowledge, share their you know, anything they can to help you succeed, you know, not only for yourself personally and professionally, but for your, you know, your the agency you're representing, whether you're in an AG's office, technically outside that state tax agency, or you're somehow in the agency. But yeah, I guess those are the thoughts that come to mind in thinking about your question.
No, that's great advice, and it's something that I also couldn't agree with you more. The folks in the state and local tax world, regardless of their role and how they're involved in it, have been professionally some of the kindest, most curious, most willing to share people that I've ever worked with. And whether that's professionals in the legal profession like yourself who came to our conferences and willingly, openly shared information to both peers and newcomer attorneys alike to help them gain the knowledge they needed, whether it's folks that engage at the program level, they're analysts, they're just getting started out, but they, you know, the willingness to ask questions and then the way those questions are received and answered, I think makes state and local tax a little bit different than a lot of industries. There's no unnecessary, you know, guarding or posturing,
right,
or gatekeeping,
right.
And that's incredible.
Right. There's not any competition there. I mean, you know, I've come to think that, you know, when any state tax agency has a win, so to speak, we all win, you know, and similarly, if somebody takes a hit, I always felt like, okay, we all got hit. So, you know, there just was a great sense of, hey, let's really work together. And that's whether it's on the policy side or the process side. I know, you know, Ryan, you and the great work you've done, you know, in terms of technology and efficiencies and those kinds of things. It just, regardless of the facet of a tax agency, there's just a great, again, community and commitment to truly trying to help everybody do better at what they do.
Absolutely. I've also learned that I do jigsaw puzzles entirely wrong based on your description, which now explains why I find them so frustrating. So unintentional, but I got great tips.
Divide and conquer. That's the thing, right?
I really got to rethink my jigsaw puzzle strategy. So as you were talking about your career arc and all the things and places you've been, I suppose I kind of want to ask two different questions, because it's a little unfair always to say, well, what was your favorite role? I think, what was the role that you learned the most in, and what was the role that you found the most excitement in to do? And they could be the same role, I suppose, but I think that at least gives you some options to highlight a couple different jobs you've had.
Well, so I think the thing that I would say in response was there were definitely things I learned and experiences I had and lessons I took away from me, you know, took away from every place that I worked, whether it was the AG's office, the law firm, controller's office, MTC. But I think the place that I felt had the greatest impact on me personally and professionally was the controller's office. And I think in part that was just because I was there the longest for almost 16 years. And it being a large organization of, you know, almost 3,000 people, there just was more, a lot of opportunities to move and grow and change along that way. So I feel like, you know, like that was the place I worked that had the most impact in a way. I don't know that I had any true favorite place that I worked. Again, I just feel like as I reflect now, each place taught me things that I carried forward and, you know, helped me to do the jobs that I, you know, was played or that I had along the way, because I did have, you know, quite a few different ones, particularly at the controller's office. But again, I really can't. And as far as like what excited me more, I think it was more the nature that I will say it this way, that the tasks that I did that probably most excited me as far as, again, the impact I felt I had, were probably more process-oriented type jobs. And like one example that I to this day feel really good about was within the controller's office. For many years, the drafting of the agency rules was all a very paper-based process. Literally, files of paper that would move from desk to desk to desk for a person to review, write their notes, you know, and pass it along. And as you can imagine, in a big agent, things would get lost. You know, things would get
worse.
And so one of the things that I was able to spearhead when I was assistant director of tax administration, and again, it was one of those opportunities where the timing was good because there was the technology coming into place with SharePoint to bring together an ability to you know, make that rule writing process electronic and be able to trace and track things. But it still took, you know, somebody to kind of see that opportunity, bring the team together and spearhead that. So, you know, that's one of those things where I felt really proud that I was able to have an impact on the that important task of rule writing by, you know, having the ability to work on a process related thing. But you know, and I suppose the other thing that I would mention is just that is more policy oriented, and that was the opportunities I had to work on things at the federal level with digital taxes and like the internet tax or the digital goods and services tax fairness act. That was a wonderful opportunity where when that particular federal bill was being developed in the early iterations, the National Governors Association brought together some of the state representatives, which included Texas, which I represented at the time, industry representatives that had an interest in that particular legislation, and to try and work on that proposed bill to make it better and make it work for both industry and the states. And that was a really fulfilling experience because, again, I got to work with some really amazing people, not just in the state realm, but in the industry realm as well. And I just remember those meetings we had where I felt like the magic was happening because we were able to sit down and really speak candidly about what the industry needs were and why they were suggesting certain language and wanted certain things in the bill. And it was just amazing at times how, from the state side, we would listen to them and we would hear what they would say, and we'd say, okay, that's helpful. We understand what you want, and that probably is could be doable, but this language you've proposed is not going to get you there. Let's work on that, you know? And so you know, those, and that brings to mind, you know, some of the great work that, you know, did in those at the Multi-State Tax Commission, and the great tradition there even before me, and what I know continues, where you have those abilities, and when you can bring the right people together to the table who are there in good faith, that can really put together something that's going to work for everybody and is a total win-win. And as many times as perhaps, you know, the states and industry butt heads and don't agree and don't see things, you know, you really want to hold on to and celebrate those wins when you can do that. So I guess, you know, both on the process side, but, you know, on the substance side, those are some of the things I was involved with, which I feel very proud of.
Well, that's amazing. And you bring up a really good point, which is the nature of what true collaboration is, especially when you start talking about government stakeholders, private sector stakeholders, other third parties that get involved depending on the program. And, you know, I think the biggest source of conflict in a lot of those projects is a fundamental misunderstanding of one party as to how the other party actually does their work. And so I can only speak to it from a technology standpoint, because I talk to tax practitioners all the time who have frustrations with state technologies. And then by the time you explain to them how a state technology, you know, how their strategy works and how they invest in these tools, all of a sudden practitioners are a lot more, you know, empathetic towards, you know, understanding why something is the way it is. And so hearing you describe, you know, the enjoying that collaborative process, I, not being an attorney, not familiar with those particular conversations, it's such a sunshine moment when everyone around the table goes, oh. And it's almost like, and our listeners can get a chuckle out of this, I feel like when someone goes, oh, in a conversation, it's almost like them admitting, like, oh, I understand, you're not just being difficult, you actually have a problem.
Right, yeah, and there's an understandable reason why you're concerned about this particular issue, or you feel like it needs to be addressed. And so yeah, again, it just, that classic thing, right, of people sitting down, really talking and really listening to one another. And you know, you may still reach that place where, having done that in good faith, that you just still can't see eye to eye, or you can't see a path forward where you can find common ground. But still having that understanding is so valuable, because, you know, you don't know down the road when things could change one way or another. And that's just, again, it's consistent with the idea that, you know, taxpayers, I genuinely believe the vast majority of them want to do the right thing or trying to do the right thing. And I know that in the departments of revenue, there's a genuine desire by the vast majority of those people to get it right and make sure that they're helping people comply and making it as easy as possible for them to do so, whether, again, it's a process issue or a policy issue. You know, if we can make it as easy and efficient for everybody, it's a total win-win, and where you can find that, you take it, and it's gold.
Well, and it's been a great peak. You know, being a process and efficiency nerd myself, amazing that one of the projects you remember is that digitization of that process, because what listeners, you know, when you summarize it, what I think a lot of listeners don't hear is that, okay, you move paper into SharePoint. When you talk about the change management required of people in order to get them to do something differently, technology is always the easy part. Yeah. You know, what people fail to understand is it's helping people understand workflows and collaboration and how that actually works. That's 90% of the work. And to put that work in for such a big administrative lift in a large agency like in Texas, that's, I would think about that fondly too if I were you. That's an incredible accomplishment, because I've seen projects like that not go well in agencies, and you know,
Well, and again, it was a, you know, and it was always a team effort, so I don't in any way want to make it sound like it was just me, because these were always team efforts, and you know this too, you know, again, sometimes you just have to have the right people at the right place at the right time for an idea that's been sitting there for a while to really, it's like planting that seed, and the right conditions allow it to grow and blossom and finally come to fruition. So
yeah, the right team can always take advantage of luck presented to them at the right time.
Exactly.
So it's always great to be in that spot. So I guess my next question for you, we've talked a lot about, you know, state agencies, and so, you know, I don't know if there's much else that you have in terms of thoughts, but I was curious about, you know, having worked in all these roles, you know, and you especially ending a role at a national level where you worked with so many different state agencies, nearly all of them across the country. What's something that you really miss about those agencies? What was something really special about them that you think about?
Well, without question, you know, there are just so many, as I've already said, wonderful people that work in the state and local tax arena. And I think, too, a lot of, I think it's not, that a lot of people who work in departments of revenue or government in general, just the nature of their personalities are such that, you know, they're very comfortable with who they are in their own skin, and they're trying to do their job, and they do a good job, and they don't seek any spotlight or recognition, you know, and so, you know, they're just, I know we're a lot of people that just were terrific, you know, at what they did, and they just never sought any real meaningful thought, you know, thanks or recognition. And so, you know, I think about that there just were a lot of terrific people who were kind of those quiet doers that you never really heard from otherwise. But, you know, they were just rock solid, and you could go to them and ask them anything, and they knew exactly what you needed, and they took care of it, and they just kept doing their thing. But of course, also, you know, in terms of the attorneys, I mean, they're just some really amazing experts in this area, far smarter, far more talented than I will ever hope to be. And so, you know, it was just a real, feels like a gift that I had to get to be around those people and listen to their thoughts about things and the studying they were doing and the writing they were doing about these different topics. And again, trying to really improve things and make things better for other people. So, you know, I'm very grateful for all the opportunities I had to work with so many wonderful people.
Awesome. Well, and I think, you know, talking about all of these folks in these agencies, I mean, you in many ways served as a role model to them, right? This is, I know I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we were talking, we just finished Women's History Month. And as I was getting ready for this interview, I was thinking about the fact that, you know, you in your career, you were a role model not only to attorneys in tax, but also, I imagine, to many female attorneys who were making their way through agencies. I mean, government, it's not a huge secret. Government for a very long time was very male-dominated, very monolithic in that point of view and that composition. And so it's kind of pioneers, if I can, you know, use that term, I suppose, like yourself, who, you know, worked through these roles and came to these tables. You know, how did you see that change in the SALT world over the course of your career? You know, I think that's probably a lesson for everyone, but in particular, paying honor to Women's History Month, I think that's possibly a good question to talk about next.
I think part of the reason that I gravitated back into the government realm after being in private practice for a few years and felt like it gave me a chance to really bloom and grow is because there were already other women in that field. And I do think it's really important for people to see others like them in roles of authority and leadership. But I do feel like within, again, the SALT world, and amongst the departments of revenue, one of the things I always felt inspired by when I would go to like FTA annual meetings, and over the years, you know, met heads of departments of revenue, there was just such a wonderful representation of women there who were fabulous. I mean, Sharon Bernardi, you know, is to me, you know, one of these giants in our field, and there's so many others that I, you know, if I don't want to start naming names because I'll forget important people that I should.
But, you name the most important one to me. I always tell people she's my most favorite human being and my favorite person I've ever worked for, and I'm not being paid to say that.
Right.
So.
I know, and you know, she's just, and like you say about being a role model and how she treats other people, and just, but as I said, I you know, was thinking about this a little bit again before talking with you today, and I do feel like one of my early role models when I was a young attorney, you know, litigating cases at the AG's office in Texas, who is now one of my dearest friends, you know, was a woman, and thank goodness, you know, and that the first division chief that I worked under was a woman. But then even in Texas in the controller's office, there were more than one female heads of the departments of revenue there that were statewide elected officials. So, you know, I said, I guess that would be something too that I would say that, but even beyond that, within the private sector folks that I interacted with over these latter years at the ABA, American Bar Association, tax section meetings, there are a lot of female powerhouses on that side of the ledger as well that just always found incredibly impressive, who were just fabulous, you know, again, attorneys and advocates. And so, you know, I don't know if there's something about the tax world that has somehow attracted a lot of talent, you know, women, minorities, and that sort of thing. We can always do better, but I just feel really fortunate that I had some great role models around me, and I didn't feel like I was being a pioneer in any way as a woman. If I was, and then you know, whatever role model I was, I'm grateful to have, you know, been able to do that, and if it inspires other people, I'm glad to have that opportunity.
Well, I certainly think that you fall into the same category of role model that you were naming. You were one of the names I think of when I think of incredible salt attorneys, and of course, as I've mentioned before, not being an attorney and with FTA and MTC, it's a close relationship. And even before you were at MTC, you were very involved in Texas in FTA programs. Being one of those people that I could reach out to as a non-attorney with a question, trying to understand something about a law or provision or just a curiosity. And then having the willingness to explain that. And that's something, you're right, maybe there's something in the water in the salt world where we all just get along a little better, because in other fields I've worked in, when you engage with attorneys outside of state and local tax, other industries I've been part of, the attorneys are far less patient with you. I mean, the attorneys tend to be, you know, they're more brusque, and they're ensconced in their law stuff, and you know, you're not a lawyer, so why are you asking that question? And so but in the tax world, it seems that there's this genuine desire to, you know, share and educate. I know we've talked about it a couple of times already, but it's just, it bears repeating. And so you're right, we do have the great fortune of having a number of women leaders that are incredible, not just talking about Sharon, of course, our executive director, but others in the field who have served as tax commissioners, division leads, general counsels. What can you settle this debate for me? I feel like I hear it both ways. Yeah. I want to hear it from an attorney.
I don't know, but we know what you mean. That's all that's important, I guess.
as long as people know what I mean, I suppose. Right. But it's, you know, you have this desire to hear diverse voices, and with a desire to hear different voices, you have a interest in, I think, meeting taxpayers where they are, right? So every taxpayer should have the opportunity to engage with someone who is like them or who they can relate to. And I think maybe that's what's in the water, I suppose. The people that we serve are the entire constituency of the United States.
So, it's, you know, everyone, yeah, exactly.
You got to have everybody at the table in order to make sure everybody is being served. So yeah. You know, that's great, great insight. And I guess, is there anything else that comes to mind when you think about state and local tax over the course of your career? I guess particularly in the last 10 years, I know there's been things like Wayfair that have really become, you know, giant landmark anchors You know, are there other things that you think about as these kind of big kind of waypoint inflection points in state and local tax that we've been through?
Yeah, I think the one other thing, and I found myself saying this, you know, many times when I was still at the Multi-State Tax Commission and speaking about, you know, the SALT world and such, and that is the one thing I did see in those latter years is just, of course, the world in general is getting smaller and smaller and more interconnected. And so the one thought that I had was for being a state and local tax attorney, more and more I had to refocus attention to what was happening at the federal level or internationally as well, that, you know, there were these movements or these issues coming about, like the OECD, and again the digital realm, and how do you fit a digital economy into state tax systems, some of which have, you know, old statutes and language that doesn't quite fit, and it's not just that you're dealing with those issues for your state businesses, your national businesses, but international firms and companies that are able to do business in your state because of the nature of the digital items that they're selling, or even the tangible things that they are selling, and what do the departments of revenue and what do you have to do as a tax attorney to educate yourself and do what you can to help people navigate those issues. So I would, like I said, that to me is the one area, the growth in having to expand your knowledge to include the international aspects, but then also at the federal level, and obviously the key, you know, project, the partnership project that was going on and will continue on, I'm sure, for many years at MTC, but trying to deal with what's happening at the federal level and how that trickles down through the state tax systems, and see again how you can make things better and help the states better navigate those issues seem to be coming more into the fore.
No, absolutely. And something that you said really resonated, because I think, you know, as we were talking about stakeholders not understanding each other, you know, something that you're talking about speaks to a desire to understand how things work so that, you know, within the constraints of a given state's statutes, you can be as consistent as possible. And I think there's this belief, prevailing belief, that that the states want to be different in certain cases. And at least from what I've seen from a technology and operations standpoint is that, and I'm curious to see if this is your belief from the legal standpoint as well, is that in most cases, states are looking for, agencies are looking for consistency so that when they're dealing with stakeholders that aren't local to them, that experience, you know, they want to make the experience as frictionless as possible. Friction creates work, and work creates time and delays, and ultimately we all want the same thing, which is taxpayers want to pay taxes and tax agencies want to receive the correct amount of taxes due, and the faster that can happen and the more consistently it can happen, the more we all win. So I think it's a little bit of a myth that we have to constantly debunk, that, you know, it's when a statute gets in the way that it's somehow we're being, you know, difficult or we're being challenging, when in reality, I think in most cases, states are trying to work through their statutes to get as close to normal as possible.
Right. And another thought that comes to mind hearing you say that is the reality that, you know, always came up against where, and I know I've said this on many occasions, you know, the departments of revenue staff, they know when they don't know, a lot of times they know when they don't know something, you know, and find themselves, to your point, there's a statute and they know there's some sort of business transaction, or there's some new way of doing business, or there's some new thing coming on, you know, the horizon that's being sold or made available, and the states know that they don't have the information to put out the guidance they would like to tell people this is taxable or this is not taxable, or and the times that, you know, even with our MTC uniformity projects, we would reach out to certain people and say, will you talk to us so we understand, you know, what you're doing and how you're doing it, but of course that is such a dangerous thing for a taxpayer to hear. You know, the classic thing, we're from the government, we're here to help you, or, you know, we're from the government, and we want to understand what you're doing. Can you explain your business to us? Because we just want to know. And how people would, like, literally ghost us at the MTC and say, we're not talking with you. So you know, what do you do with that? You know, sometimes you're just left with the information that you have, and you have to just make the best of that and make the best, you know, taxability or other determination. But the other thing that comes to mind, you know, talking about this issue, you had said something, is that another thing I would say, I think, to maybe young attorneys or young people that are, you know, new to a Department of Revenue, the one thing I found myself saying also, and as I learned more, is that, you know, looking at tax policy, looking at tax issues is really a way of seeing the economy in your state. And, you know, when legislators make decisions about what is and what is not taxable or how they want to handle certain things, you really can learn a lot about the economy that you're in your state or your world by some of those determinations that get made. So, you know, for all the times that I, in my years of being a tax attorney, that when I would tell somebody that, they immediately thought I prepared tax returns, and I had to try to explain to them kindly, I'm not a numbers person. I always said, that's why God made auditors, and thank goodness, because I am not, I never have been a numbers person. Do not add me, you know, ask me to do numbers, but, you know, help me. You know, I can look at words, and I can look at language and try and figure out, you know, what does this mean, or is this constitutional? But yeah, I always thought there was such a interesting connection between tax policy and tax determinations in a state and in the economy, and it can give you a really interesting perspective on those issues.
No, absolutely. You know, I reflect back to even thinking about our former economist who retired a little over a year ago, would frequently tell me about, you know, anything that was permanently in statute as taxable or not taxable, and how, from an economist's perspective, from his perspective, that wasn't necessarily the wisest thing, because trends change and the allocation of how people spend their money changes. And so if your goal is to, you know, tax things that are going to create a level base, then, you know, permanently closing off a certain something from yourself to ever be able to levy a tax against is not necessarily good policy. But it's, again, it speaks to the collaboration now. I mean, he was reflecting on trends from, you know, 30 years of his time in the role. You know, now with such a collaborative focus, my hope and my belief is that more times than not, state agencies are involving those stakeholders. And, you know, legislatures are going to do what they're going to do, but at least when the agency is interpreting those rules, especially when similar agencies get similar directives from their legislatures, like that, I see that sharing happen all the time across our programs. Is one of the things that, you know, mentioned Brian earlier, our general counsel, when he works with the attorneys in the states. It's so fascinating to listen to those discussions because, like you said, they can't always get an answer from the private sector because it's scary when the government asks you to explain what you do so they know if they have to tax it or not. But what they're really in earnest trying to do is say, okay, what is this activity most closely matched so that we can be fair?
Right. And get it right, you know, because it may not be taxable. Because I know that was one of those things, too. As I, you know, advanced in the agency, there were times I'd be party to policy discussions, and I would sit around a table and I would say, look, guys, it's okay if it's not taxable. We can make that. If that's the right answer, don't be looking for something to be taxable. If it's not, it's okay for us to determine this isn't taxable and move on. You know, there's other things that we need to work on, but
fairness is fairness. I think that's something that I hear the word all the time, and it's, and the intent behind it is, you know, how, what's equivalent, what's fair, what's going to be equal for everybody, is reasonably interpreted. Right. So, all right, we're coming up on the end of our time together. I've got two more questions for you. One is there anything in your parking lot that you didn't quite get to before you retired? Was there something that you really had hoped you would get to work on that you hadn't quite gotten to yet, or, you know, something like that? Maybe something that couldn't be worked on yet because the world hadn't caught up with what you were thinking. I was just curious.
No, you know, there really isn't, Ryan. I just, again, I feel such gratitude. I had a lot of wonderful opportunities along the way and in my career, and I suppose there are different points where I could have, you know, zigged when I zagged, or I could have chosen a different pathway, but I've done what I've done, and I feel good about what I've accomplished, just in terms of just me personally and professionally. Again, just working with some really wonderful people along the way. I'm hoping I've left things a little better than I found it, you know, in the different places that I worked. I always enjoyed the mentoring and the helping of the young attorneys and others around me to help them advance and reach their goals and dreams. That was always something I just thoroughly enjoyed and believed in. And so, no regrets and no sense that there was something, you know, left on the table. I just, again, feel grateful that I've had the opportunities that I have, and I feel like, you know, I'm in a good place in terms of this chapter of my life. I am keeping my law license for another year, that I've decided, just because who knows what may happen, but for now, what I'm doing feels right. And I know that's one of those things, and I suppose that's part of just getting older perhaps, but, you know, even before I decided to leave the MTC and would be, you know, again, talking with maybe younger attorneys, I just always said, you know, every time I've followed my heart and my gut, I've never regretted it. And so I just feel like, you know, when the time came to leave the MTC, that was what my heart and my gut told me was the right thing to do. And so I feel good about, you know, the decision I made and again, the career I've had, and really just pleased to be where I am right now.
That's awesome. I would expect nothing less from someone with expert jigsaw puzzle strategy, that you would have, you know, checked all the boxes, done what you've done.
I guess maybe for my jigsaw puzzle, metaphor, maybe I did finally finish the puzzle that I was working on, at least through that chapter. And it's just time for a new jigsaw puzzle, you know?
I love that metaphor. It's stuck with us this whole conversation. I won't let it go. I'm still just mesmerized by the strategy, because you would think, being an operations person, I would have figured that out a long time ago. But I guess you learn something new every day. So my last question for you, okay, before we say farewell, is, you mentioned a lot about mentoring attorneys and kind of, you know, you've had role models. You've been a role model to many attorneys in the state and local tax space. So, you know, what advice do you have for newer aspiring SALT attorneys? Mm-hmm. And then kind of my second question to that is, in honor of Women's History Month, are there any particular advice that you have for women attorneys that are interested in coming up in the SALT space?
Well, I guess I'll take the second one first, just that I don't know that I have any special advice for the women. Again, I just feel like if you're in the SALT field, the fact you're a woman would be no different than if I was giving counsel to a young male attorney. I think there's going to be great opportunities across the board. You know, you got to have the fundamentals. I mean, you need to show up. You know, you need to do the very best job that you can, demonstrate that you are competent and your character, you know, your reputation, follow through with what you say you're going to. I know I always told young attorneys when I talked to them at the controller's office, you know, try very hard not to burn bridges. This world is very small, and you just never know where people may end up. And so, you know, be mindful of that. You know, treat everybody with dignity and kindness. Again, the support staff around you will save your, you know what, when the S hits the fan someday. So just, you know, be grateful and treat everybody well. But also know, ultimately, I guess I would say, that the only perfect path is yours, keeping in mind it will not be perfect. You know, there will be bumps and things that happen along the way. But kind of as I've already said, I came to realize, whenever I follow my heart and my gut, regardless of what anybody else may think about my decisions, I never regretted it. And so, you know, I think if you're in the state and local tax world, there's a lot of wonderful opportunity to truly make a difference. And you may not know today that that regulation you worked on, or that case you worked on, or that piece of legislation you worked on may someday have more of an impact than what you know. Because certainly one thing that is true, and you know, you've touched on this already, Ryan, in our conversation, that you never know where in the state a new novel issue is going to bubble up. And the states are going to, you know, again, you've got a wonderful community of people around you that you can reach out to, whether it's FTA or MTC. There are people, other attorneys, who are more than willing to help you learn and grow and support you. And just if you're enjoying this area of work, then there's a lot of good that you can do and be very proud of. Again, you know, whether it's me or somebody else, I know that there be people out there that are willing to talk with you and support you and help you on your way. So I guess I would leave it with those thoughts.
I don't think we could have ended this conversation any better. So without anything else on the docket to ask you, Nancy, it has been a true pleasure to catch up with you, to have this conversation. I hope our listeners, those of you who hung out with us through the very end, I hope you did, because that was golden advice you just heard. And I look forward to seeing what your next jigsaw puzzle looks like. So I look forward to talking again real soon. Thanks so much, Nancy.
Thank you, Ryan. And greetings to all my SALT friends. And I'm on LinkedIn, so reach out anytime. I'd love to hear from you.
Excellent. Well, thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on an episode of Tax Breaks from FTA. Thank you.